from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. San Francisco Republican Party Chair Hamid Dhillon made history over the weekend. She became the first woman to be elected vice chair of the state GOP. A practicing Sikh of Indian descent, she endured several racial slurs during the course of her campaign. And we're going to talk this segment to Hamid Dhillon about her unusual career, including, by the way, a stint as a board member with the American Civil Liberties Union. We'll talk about her vision for the party and her experience as a Republican in San Francisco. And Hamid Dhillon, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thanks, Michael.
I guess your resume doesn't look like the usual party chair. I mean, despite the fact that California may be not exactly a red state, I'm wondering, first of all, about the blowback that you had. Somebody in San Bernardino who slammed you on Facebook, and some pretty ugly things occurred before you got to this position.
You know, Michael, I've been in politics for 25 years, and I've been a minority my entire life. And so I'm used to not necessarily being the most popular kid on the block. That doesn't faze me. And you have to have a thick skin to be a trial lawyer like I am, and you have to have a thick skin to be a Republican in San Francisco. So I'm equipped for those types of slings and arrows. But I will say that I overwhelmingly won my election on Sunday by a 4-1 margin, and that shows that the mainstream of our party's leadership in no way shares any racist views like that.
Well, and the party backed you up, which is to the credit of the party members who did come out strongly and stridently behind you. Of course, you're from North Carolina, and Nikki Haley's from South Carolina, and she's also a Sikh.
That's right, and I'm sure Nikki has endured. I know she did in her campaign substantial racist criticism. You know, my dad wears a turban. My brother wears a turban. He lives here in San Jose. And after 9/11, we were certainly the focus of a lot of attacks of people.
Well, there was a guy who was killed, I remember, in Arizona, who was a Sikh because they thought he was part of Osama bin Laden right after 9/11. Those kind of horror stories that come back. But your parents were, shall we say, well, different than what normally we might associate. I mean, they were actually backing Jesse Helms back in the day, weren't they?
Well, you know, my dad came here to America. He's a doctor to escape socialism that was there in India and to give his kids a better opportunity for the future. And as soon as my parents became American citizens, both of them are Republicans from day one. And Jesse Helms was a strong supporter of conservative values in North Carolina, and particularly lower taxation and less regulation. And he was a friend of the Sikh community. And so my parents were very proud to support him election after election and help get a lot of Sikhs involved in the political process in North Carolina.
And then you went on to Dartmouth and were actually editor of the Dartmouth Review, which has always been characterized as quite conservative.
It is, and it was then known as the most conservative and probably prominent college newspaper in America. And I actually got into it with my Dartmouth administration on their attempts to squelch conservative free speech on campus. So we were the focus of a lawsuit against Dartmouth, and we're actually on 60 Minutes. So I believe our paper helped encourage conservative students throughout the United States to be open about their views and not be afraid of political correctness.
How'd you go from the kind of conservatism to winding up defending employees at KPFA and working for the ACLU?
I've never worked for the ACLU, Michael. I was on the board of the American Civil Liberties Union Northern California chapter after that incident you mentioned after 9/11 when people of my religious community were getting shot at. I became a national spokesperson for the Sikh community on education to law enforcement as well as to you know, the general public about who are the Sikhs and why we shouldn't be shot at and what are our articles of faith. And accordingly, the local chapter asked me to join their board. I served a 3-year term on the board of the local chapter, and that issue and religious liberty was my main focus.
You were defending, I believe, a number of cases involving Sikhs with beards and turbans and those kinds of things that have been pretty much news fodder for years.
They have, and I am probably one of the leading Sikh civil rights attorneys in the United States. I've won some cases against the state of California, which has discriminated against Sikhs who wear turbans and beards.
Let's talk about the Republican Party, because you've made it clear that you want a political party and it's about winning. And yet right now the Republicans are down in many ways. I mean, they not only lost the national election, but there was a 2-thirds majority. There probably will be again of Democrats in the state legislature. And how do you shift that, particularly, the concern that many have that the Republican Party is not working in their social or their in particular interests?
Well, you know, we take a leaf from what happened in Texas. And 20 years ago, Texas had a similar situation to what Republicans are facing right now. Texas, the Republicans held no constitutional offices, and they didn't have control of their legislature either. They made a concerted effort in Texas to identify Republican, conservative candidates from a diverse range of communities, including the African-American Latino communities. As a result, they were able to take back every constitutional office, and they were able to take back control of the legislature, and it's a totally red state now. There's no reason why we can't do the same in California. It requires an effort, and it requires a mindset. I can tell you that our new chairman, Jim Brulte, and I are very committed to doing that here in California.
And yet the social issues and, well, the concern of different ethnic groups and the sorts of things that have been major, immigration issue, et cetera, in terms of Republican Party politics, have hurt the Republicans from gaining the kind of ground. I mean, we've got changing demographics here in California that really speak to that. How do you say directly to those people who have been associating the Republican Party with, as I said, not their best interest, that the Republican Party perhaps does represent their best interest?
Well, on the social issues, you know, it's actually each candidate who gets out there and represents their views to the voters. We have pro-choice candidates in our party, and we have candidates who support the label of marriage being associated with a gay relationship as well. And so, you know, I think that each voter has to take a look at who the candidates are who are running and see whether that candidate reflects their values. And there are a lot of Americans, a lot of Californians who believe that life begins at conception, and that's an important moral value to them, just as slavery was an important moral value back in the time that Abraham Lincoln fought for the right to free the slaves. So I think those are all individual decisions, but as a practical matter, abortion is something that the Supreme Court decided at least on the first trimester level 40 years ago, and so there's a limited range on which any voter can really affect that issue.
Well, notwithstanding the question of abortion, there's been certainly a lot of negativity associated with, not outside of California, of course, but Republican statements of candidates about rape and things of that sort.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you. We have suffered in the last election from numerous self-inflicted wounds by Republican candidates who are ill-informed about science as well as ill-informed about the statecraft of politics and how to communicate well with voters. And so, you know, we have to do a better job of vetting candidates, and we have to do a better job when candidates say stupid things of making a different decision.
And you yourself were in an arranged marriage, and it was an abusive marriage, and I wonder if I could find out what your stand is, for example, on the recently passed, just last week, Violence Against Women Act. The Republican Party was split on it. The Democrats were not.
My main issue with the Violence Against Women Act is that it's been struck down in parts before that are similar to the ones that were under discussion and on the table now. And, you know, the real issue is not whether violence against women is a good thing or not. I think that's universally condemned in any civil society. But whether there should be a federal law over it, the federalization of our society and of our justice system has a negative impact. And I'm a lawyer. I can tell you that it is now every one of us walking down the street is committing some kind of federal crime or the other. And that leads to selective enforcement, that leads to overlapping jurisdiction, and that leads to oppression and tyranny. And so I think that's really the issue that conservatives have. As a practical matter, you know, the federalization train may have already left the station, but I think that there are certain aspects of that law that were troublesome and are likely to again be challenged in court.
We're talking, if you just joined us, with Harmy Dillon. She's vice chair of the California Republican Party. She was elected over the weekend at the state party convention in Sacramento. It's the first time a woman has held the post, and congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Also chair of the San Francisco Republican Party and an attorney at Dillon and Smith LLP. And you may have questions you want to ask her, or you may simply want to comment. And if so, let me give you the phone line, and you can join us now at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your involvement, and feel free to join us with your questions or comments. Toll-free, 866-733-6786, or you can email us. Our email address is forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you have directly on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or you can go to our Facebook page, and in fact, we asked a number of people if they had questions on the Facebook page, and Ivan wants to know what your stance is on climate change.
Well, again, this is not an issue that the state party affects or votes on, but, you know, there's certainly science on both sides of that issue. What I think conservatives do agree on is that conservation is an important principle, and we should not be doing anything to our beautiful state here that degrades the environment. And so, you know, as the science comes in, we keep looking at that issue, and some of the conservatives I know who are ranchers and who are farmers and who are out there in the country are as environmentally sensitive as anybody.
And Kenji writes on our Facebook page, are there any positions you think the GOP should never consider backing away from, no matter how great the political cost?
I would say never say never. We do have a party platform that is subject to vote and debate every 4 years in the state of California, just like they do in the Democrat Party. And every 4 years, we come together and caucus, and we look at those issues, and we change some of those issues from time to time. But it's a long process. I mean, this is a party with some fundamental values.
Well, it's a party that in San Francisco has had a tough time of it. I don't know if you knew my late friend Billy Loenberg, who was very active in the Republican Party, but I used to kid him about being a lonely guy. And it does get difficult, doesn't it, at times?
It is. It's been called, I think, by the Chronicle, the loneliest job in politics, being the chair of the San Francisco Republican Party. And that's a job I've held for a couple of years. That being said, in the last election, I ran for the state Senate as a Republican with my name and my religion, and I got more than 50,000 votes from California voters here, right here in San Francisco County and northern part of San Mateo County. So more than 20% of the city tends to vote with the Republican Party recommendations in every election. And that means that at the local level, we're able to sway elections, including a number of supervisor elections and other propositions and measures on the ballot.
I think you've said publicly that you are hopeful that ranked choice voting might actually help Republicans in San Francisco.
I don't think so. I think ranked choice voting is undemocratic, ultimately, and confusing, and not a way to go. I happen to side with Willie Brown on that.
Unusual alliance. I thought you were on the other. I thought it odd, in fact, that you were quoted supposedly as being on the other side. But you mentioned your religion, and your religion is a Sikh religion. And yet, again, some of the slams that came from within the party were saying you were a Muslim and you were in favor of beheadings. I mean, where did all that come from? Do you have any
idea? Well, to be clear, there were no slurs coming from within the party in the sense of anybody, you know, with any respect in the party, the people who happen to be Republicans saying stupid things. And in any group of millions and millions of people who are registered as Republicans.
Well, forgive me, wasn't the woman in San Bernardino who posted these things on Facebook head of the county group of Republican women?
Yes, a group that endorsed me overwhelmingly in this election. And so her views are, and as I'm sure you're aware, Michael, immediately condemned by her own organization. And I suspect she may not be holding a leadership position 2 months from now.
But and you feel this is anomalous, obviously, for
it is anomalous. I mean, I won my election by a factor of 4-1. That speaks for itself.
What about those flyers that were handed out by right here in San Francisco by Gail Nierra?
Yeah, Gail Nierra, again, has been censured twice by our Central Committee and kicked off the Central Committee. She's wacko, and every political party has their wackos.
Does she call you a Taj Mahal princess or something?
Call me a Taj Mahal princess. She's called me worse, and she's also said that I should be more deferential to women of more dominant minority groups. So, you know, again, those are not views that are politely held in any drawing room in San Francisco, and she's not somebody who is welcome in any Republican circle that I'm aware of.
But there are those who criticize the Republican Party for not being receptive enough, let's not use the word deferential, or not being aware enough of the needs of women.
People say that, but time and time again, Michael, I have been elected to the presidency or chairmanship or editorship of more than 15 conservative organizations throughout my life, and I don't believe gender or religion or ethnic background were ever a factor holding me back. There have been other factors holding me back over the years, you know, personal issues, whatever, but never those factors. And I think that I can truly say here, in middle age, I have not experienced that in our party. And again, the fact that I was recruited to run for this party position and won overwhelmingly speaks for itself.
Well, a lot of people who support you like the ideas you have about pension reform. What are you advocating on that score?
Well, I think that I was asked this question yesterday, what is the single biggest issue facing California right now? And I think that the single biggest issue facing California is the grip of the unions on the Democrats in Sacramento. And a corollary to that is inflated pension demands and expectations. I mean, those of us who've been in the private sector our entire lives, like me, understand that, we can't afford that type of system going forward, and it's not fair, and it's not right, and it's not right for those of us who pay the taxes who support it. And it's detrimental to our state. Every time we let the unions win on increasing and padding their pensions without regard to merit and without regard to means, we are taking away money from kids who need a good education. We're taking away money from social services. We're taking away money to protect our environment.
So you still like Chris Christie? I mean, I asked that because he was a real he was a real point man on that score up until recently. He was the darling of certainly the conservatives in your party, but he seems to be on the out now. They didn't invite him to their big convention.
Well, you know, Ann Coulter's a good friend of mine. She's been on board with Chris for a while. I liked him a lot less after the big sloppy hug with President Obama. That was perhaps not necessary. But again, you know, he's a person, and this is a party of ideas and principles. So I'm not discouraged if one person in the party happens to, you know, take a different position. You know, he certainly seems to have caved in a bit on Obamacare issues as well recently. But, you know, he's not here in California. In California, we're expecting our Republican leaders to hold the line on taxes. We're expecting them to hold the line on regulation, and we're expecting them to advocate those conservative principles. And, you know, we're taking a hard look at that.
But you've also got a lot of adversarial power in the two-thirds majority now.
It's huge, but it's not insurmountable. Again, Texas Republican Party was able to turn that situation around. I'm confident that with a renewed effort on identifying candidates in the Latino communities and candidates in the African American and the Asian communities who are good conservatives and who are willing to hold that, carry that flag into battle, we can do the same as Texas has done in turning our party around.
Our guest is Harmy Dillon. Again, she's vice chair of the California Republican Party, elected over the weekend at the state party convention, and it's the first time a woman has held that post. She also chairs the San Francisco Republican Party and is an attorney with Dillon and Smith LLP. Let me bring your calls on here, and we go to Janelle, our first caller. Good morning.
Good morning. Congratulations, Ms. Dillon, on your win.
Thank you, Janelle.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm a public educator. I'm down with the pensions. I'm all over, you know, the 99%. I'm really supportive of that movement. But recently I've been concerned about the inability of, you know, from Congress on down to, for the liberal area and the conservative area to really work together. But when I hear somebody as, you know, experienced and articulate as you are, it gives me hope. So my question is, are there three or four, say, policy pillars that you could see working together on with your basically political opposition? I mean, like the idea of good conservative, bad conservative, it exists in both extremes. But where can you, I know that's not your job right now, but ideologically, do you see any place where you could, or where your people could come together with the liberal people who are willing to cooperate? Like, what would those areas be?
Absolutely. So just to name a couple off the top of my head, I mean, first of all, it pains me to say this, but Jerry Brown is probably the most conservative Democrat in Sacramento right now, and that's a sad commentary.
Yes, it is.
on our system when that's the case. But Jerry Brown has expressed a willingness to take on the pension monster that is eating this state, and that is certainly an area of common ground with the Republican Party, which has been focusing on that issue for a while. When he was the mayor of Oakland, Jerry Brown was willing to take on drug dealers and drug users who were occupying Section 8 housing and say that if you aren't willing to follow the law, you aren't entitled to public benefits either. And I respect that, and I think that was a great and courageous move for a Democrat to take. You know, those are the types of issues. I think Jerry Brown has been pretty good on articulating at least the fact that burdensome regulations are driving voters from the state, driving taxpayers from the state. Now, he hasn't been able to do much about that because, as I said, he's on the conservative wing of the Democrat Party now, and his colleagues, Steinberg et al., in the legislature, are very happy to keep jacking up the taxes and giving out goodies to their buddies who support them and getting elected time and again. And this is bad for California because they're looting the piggy bank, and eventually the piggies are going to leave the state, and they are doing that every day. Families, taxpayers, from the top to the bottom of the political spectrum, are leaving the state, and that's a disaster for California.
Let me thank the caller. And when we talk about the division in California, or for that matter nationally, between Democrats and Republicans, there's a big division within your party now. And where do you stand on that? And I'm not necessarily only talking about the Tea Party. I'm talking about those who are perhaps even more conservative than many of those who have been associated with the Tea Party.
I don't know that, well, yes, we have I would recharacterize that as saying that we have a big tent in our party, and that's been the case.
I think we heard that that phrase a while ago from Lee Atwater, didn't we?
We heard it from Lee Atwater. We've heard it from Ronald Reagan, and it's a good thing, and we're at 29.3% registration in our state, and I think at the last convention that we had over the weekend, I heard and I talked to hundreds of delegates, and I can tell you that people agree and people understand that we need to pull together and focus on the 80% of the agreement that we have within our party and not focus on the 20% of differences.
Yeah, but when you mentioned Ronald Reagan, he also had an 11th commandment, thou shalt not speak ill of another Republican or a fellow Republican. Boy, there's a lot of that. There wasn't only a lot of that in the campaign, which finally wound up with Mitt Romney as a nominee. There's still a lot of it.
There is a lot of it. I mean, we're not a party that stifles dissent, but I think one of the encouraging things about our party is, you know, the Tea Party has brought some fresh blood into the party. It's also brought some candidates who were not the best performers at the polls in the last election. We also have a strong wing of libertarianism in our party that's increasing in influence. And I think that over time, you're going to see that having an impact on the party platform.
Let me bring another caller in, and we'll go to Montgomery, Alabama, and welcome Eric. Morning, Eric.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Okay. Join us.
Ma'am, I'm a truck driver due to no jobs in my little town I live in, and I've seen a lot of the country. I've seen a lot of business all over the country, top, bottom, middle. And you made a comment a little while ago about unions, and I've seen it firsthand. You go from one factory that has union and another factory that doesn't, and the workers that are under these unions are so self-entitled, and the amount of work that comes out of the union places or whatnot is not even close and comparable to the guys that work without a union. It is the biggest crippling structure in America. If people would realize that and come up with something else that would help this country get back to work.
All right, sir. We thank you for those comments, and I suspect they're not necessarily out of sync with your feelings about unions.
Right. Well, I want to say that Ronald Reagan was a you know, head of a union, and my husband, a recently retired member of the Public Utilities Commission staff, belonged to a union as an engineer. Unions are not inherently evil, but what they've come to stand for, the caller is correct, is entitlement and increasing aggrandizement and entitlement at the expense of people who don't have jobs, at the expense of consumers, and that's got to stop.
I've got a listener here named JB who writes, the Texas example you used is weak. The future demographic changes for Texas will probably change it to blue within 10 to 20 years. California will not shift red.
Okay, that's the opinion of that writer, and I respectfully disagree, and I think we have a terrific chance to pick up some seats in the upcoming midterm elections. In this decade, the 2014 elections are going to be our biggest opportunity as a Republican Party because historically, as students of political science can tell you, in the sixth year of a two-term president's candidacy, that party in power tends to lose a lot of seats in Congress, and we hope that rising tide is going to affect us here in the state races as well.
Well, you realize most of the polls are showing that Americans are blaming Republicans for the problems vis-a-vis sequestration more than the Democrats.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how those polls turn. It's a fairly recent issue, and I think we're going to end up seeing the president owning this issue that he created.
Eric says, your guest just referred to the Democratic Party as the Democrat Party. She just can't help herself. Does she not understand that the GOP's tone and lack of civility in California and across the nation is one of the reasons they're losing ground?
I think that's a rhetorical question.
But did you call it the Democrat Party? Because they call themselves the Democratic Party, yeah.
I could have stumbled. There's no disrespect meant by that.
Brian says, it said that politics is a contact sport, and understandably so. I've voted mostly Democrat, he says Democrat, but not exclusively, until the 90s when it became overwhelmingly clear that most of your party's leaders, state and national, were saying and doing absolutely anything they could get away with to win, the effect of Vince Lombardization of the GOP. Any comments?
I think Nancy Pelosi does just about anything she can to win. And, I mean, look at this recent sequestration issue where we have demagogues throughout the state of California telling us that unless we compromise and raise taxes again, houses are going to burn down. I think Ami Bera was quoted as saying that yesterday, Congressman Ami Bera. This type of demagoguery is grossly irresponsible. We have Janet Napolitano releasing criminals into our streets. Again, demagoguery. Let's face it, as Nikki Haley said, a child could find enough cuts in the budget, which is super fat, to avoid sequestration, but the president doesn't have the guts to do that.
And then we go. Eric joins us. Eric, you're on.
Yes, good morning to both of you, and congratulations.
Thank you.
I guess I'm voicing a little frustration on the part of myself. I'm a Republican in San Francisco, which I guess is kind of rare, as Michael was saying. But I'm more of a social liberal, fiscal conservative kind of Republican. And the frustration that myself and a lot of friends of mine have with the Republican Party is, looking back at the situation with Romney and Obama, the last election, I mean, to me at least, and many of my friends after the first debate, you know, we saw Romney as being clearly the much more competent and smarter candidate, you know, between the two. And with a 7.9 or 8%, you know, unemployment, we thought for sure Romney would have won the election. Yet he lost. And in looking back and talking to friends of mine and many other Republicans of my kind of thought process, we think that the Republicans should start to back off on some of the social issues that they're very much, you know, embracing, like anti-gay stuff, you know, the abortion issues, and issues that are kind of passé at this point and kind of need to move. We need to move on to become a little more of a social liberal party, more like maybe the libertarians, like you were saying.
Let me get a response on that, if I may, from Eric from Harmony Dillon, because we're running short on time here. And I'm actually interested in perhaps what you have to say about bringing more libertarians into your party.
Well, I am the chairman of the San Francisco Republican Party now, in addition to being the vice chair of the state party, and I can tell you that if you came to one of our meetings, Eric, at the San Francisco Republican Party, you would see gays at the table, you would see women who are pro-choice and men who are pro-choice at the table, and you would see Ron Paul supporters at the table. So we have a very diverse party in San Francisco. We don't turn any Republican away who's well-meaning and wants to share our values of limited government and personal responsibility. Political parties and movements change over time, and they change by the involvement of people like you. So if you feel strongly that the party should be changing in those regards, you should join up, you should voice those opinions, and eventually things do change. And I also agree with you that some of the social issues that wings of our party focus on are really not within the control of the party at all. One is Roe versus Wade. That is actually something that the courts decided a long time ago. And so there's a limited area for us to be able to maneuver in that area. The Supreme Court is probably going to decide the issue of Prop 8 very shortly, and that may similarly close off some avenues of legislative maneuvering in that regard. And so you have Republicans out there. I see Assemblymember Rocky Chavez, who is a newly elected freshman in our assembly, Republican, Latino, came out in favor of gay marriage, I think, yesterday.
We'll leave it there because we've come to the conclusion here. Harmony Dillon, thank you so much for joining us. Harmony Dillon, again, is vice chair now of the California Republican Party, was elected over the weekend. We have another hour of Forum up ahead with Joyce Carol Oates. Stay with us. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.